So let me start by recapping what we saw yesterday. So we were looking at the Kerr solution with this rather complex metric structure. We see that the main objects are the parameters. And now there are two parameters, not just one, as in Schwarzschild, we have the mass and also the this parameter A. So this parameter, the mass m, is just the masses seen from infinity, like in Schwarzschild. And now we have a new parameter A, which is the angular momentum per unit mass, again, seen from infinity. So it's the total angular momentum of this solution as seen from infinity. Why it makes sense to talk about infinity here? Essentially, if we take r to infinity in this solution, we get back Minkowski plus corrections, and we can treat these corrections as linear correction, so we have a notion of what the Newtonian potential is, what the angular momentum of the solution is, and so on. Now, we can take the limit of A going to 0, and what do we expect to get? We expect to get something with the mass and no angular momentum, and indeed it goes back to Schwarzschild. This is not too hard to see, because rho square becomes r square, and delta is essentially our f factor. So things recombine appropriately. If we take the mass to 0 while keeping A fixed, what we get is Minkowski. So because both mass and angular momentum goes to 0, even if A is fixed, because this is per unit mass. However, what happens is that we get Minkowski back in some strange coordinates, which are not spherical. So what we see is that the origin, so at r and t equals 0, is not a point but a disk. And the boundary of this disk happens to be at theta equal pi over half. Now, why I'm saying this? I'm saying this because we cannot quite think of r as a radial coordinate then. It is a radial coordinate very far away, where the shape of the ellipsoid doesn't matter anymore. But close to the center, it's important. And this shows up when we look what kind of singularity structure this metric has. And we realize by computing curvature invariance and so on that things explode at rho squared equals 0. And at rho squared equals 0, well, we see that this guy goes to infinity, the r squared goes to 0, like the some angular part goes to 0. So this is the analog of the r equals 0 singularity in Schwarzschild, except that now this requires both r squared to be 0 and cos squared theta to be 0. So we get back this ring singularity. Well, we get back the ring, which is now where the singularity is supported. The next thing to look for is if this metric has horizon. So we know that the Schwarzschild metric does, so we expect that this one does too. So this afternoon at tutorial, we will actually study the Schwarzschild solution in great detail and really draw these horizons by building coordinates and allow us to go through them and see exactly how they work. But for the moment, we look for a more sloppy but intuitive way of thinking. And so the horizon emerges when we have this direction, which is outside space-like. And when we cross the horizon, this direction all of a sudden becomes time-like. And if this is the radial direction, what is happening? It tells us that once we cross, we are forced to go towards, like, it cannot get out in the sense that r has minus r points in towards the future. So we are forced to go towards smaller and smaller r's. And this happens when delta r flips signs. So now there are different cases which are given. There is the case when there is too much angular momentum, then there is no solution. And the physical singularity that we found is actually naked, which means it can be seen from infinity, and we argued that this would mean the breakdown of causality and predictability, and therefore we exclude this solution. This doesn't mean that we have proven that these solutions do not arise from reasonable initial data, but there is a lot of evidence that this cannot happen, because if we have something that collapses from some regular initial data, it actually sheds out all the excess angular momentum by gravitational waves or expulsion of matter and so on. So this, we neglect this possibility. We say that is non-physical. Then there is, of course, the case where these two become equal, and this is the extremal case. And finally, which is, of course, the transition case between the two regimes, and then there is the physical case. And there are then two horizons, which arise at, if I'm not mistaken, So we see that when a goes to zero, one happens to be at r equals zero, and the other, which is not quite an horizon, was the singularity, and the other one was at 2m. So we're happy. Now the two, however, are closer and are from the singularity. Now we will, as I said before, focus on the exterior horizon for the most part, because the interior structure of Kerr is pathological and unstable under perturbations, whereas the exterior one is guaranteed to be the final state of a gravitational collapse with angular momentum. Okay, so focus on exterior horizon R plus. Okay, now we also recalled yesterday that something else special happens at the horizon in Schwarzschild. That is, not only partial r, so the vector in the radial directions becomes time-like, but also the time-like Killing vector fields, that is dt at infinity, become space-like when we go in. So let's look. And as I recalled also yesterday, this solution has two Killing. Vector field. One is psi a, which is dt, and the other one is psi a, which is d phi. So this is time translation invariant, which is stationarity. And this is axis symmetry. And there is nothing else, contrary to Schwarzschild, which is actually spherically a spherical symmetry and is actually stationary and even static. So in this case, we can ask, where does psi a become space-like? So what is the physical interest of this question? So remember, a stationary observer at infinity is an observer that follows this trajectory. Now, in Schwarzschild, we can approach the horizon as much as we want by being on one of these trajectories, which are trajectories at fixed theta and phi and radius. We just move along the time direction. Now, when we cross the horizon, we cannot stay anymore on one of these orbits because we're forced to move towards smaller and smaller values of r. So but here, what is happening is that these effects that we cannot stay stationary anymore, so at fixed radius theta and phi, no matter how much we accelerate, it will happen earlier than at the horizon. So This is called, where these happen, so the surface at which these happen is called the limit. Stationary limit sphere, because it's the last place where we can stay stationary. And the point is that this happens before hitting the horizon. And the radius at which this happens is, oops.
Wait, why is it called stationary instead of stationary?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's me. I trust your English more than mine. So, well, you pick the one you want. I will not remove points for for the extra INT. So this happens at M plus square root M square minus A square. Now, how do we compute this? Well, it's where psi becomes null. So psi mu equals zero at this place. So we just have to compute where this is happening. And now we see that at theta, when cos squared is one, at theta equals zero and pi, well, this coincides with the horizon, but otherwise is actually outside of the horizon. Okay, so what is the picture? The picture is as follows. We have, our exterior horizon, which in some axis of rotation. And around this axis of rotation, inside, we have an inner horizon, which we're not going to study much, and also a ring-like singularity, which is at rho square equals zero over here. And outside, there is a slightly bigger surface, which coincides at the poles with the horizon, and otherwise is outside of it, which is our, this is R plus, and this is RL. Let me just mention that this surface is time-like everywhere except at the pole. SD is time-like everywhere except at the pole. Where is, of course, null because it coincides with the horizon, which is null.
What is SLS?
Stationarity limit sphere.
Aldo?
Yep.
Is there a definition of the stationary limit sphere if we can't find a time-like Killing vector?
No, I would say no. I don't know if there is a difference. Yeah. So this region in between the horizon and the stationarity limit sphere is called the ergosphere. And we shouldn't have green chalks because they are kind of useless. Yes.
Can you explain what it means for a surface to be time-like? Do you mean like any trajectory on a surface is time-like, or?
No. Things can be. So think. So a surface is space-like if every line on the surface is space-like. It's time-like. You can have, so think of the TX plane. These would be time-like, even though it has some space-like directions. So it means that it has a...
It contains components of...
Yes. And it's null if it has some null direction. It contains null directions.
What does ergosphere really mean? What does the ergo here mean? Where does the name come from?
Well, we will. I think it comes from what I'm about to say, which is, let me. Okay. So now we said that we cannot stay stationary in this air, in this region. So in the ergosphere is where we cannot stay stationary. So what do we have to do instead? Well, we have to spin around in the same direction as the black hole. Because we have to, because d phi over d lambda has to be has to have the same sign of A, essentially. So if A is spinning one direction, d phi over d lambda is positive and of same sign. So we have to spin together with the black hole. This is what this is telling us.
What is lambda here?
Lambda is some affine parameter.
Okay.
Just if you want tau. Phi dot. Yeah.
So it's like any arbitrary sort of time parameter.
Yep. Yeah, it doesn't. It goes towards the future. So we have to spin together with the black hole when we're here.
Why is that?
I'm not doing the computation, but what is sure from the definition of this place is that we cannot stay stationary because dt, which would be the proportional to the four velocity of a stationary observer, is space-like, so it cannot be a four velocity in the first place. And the way this gets corrected is by adding terms that spin to
you. You said your dt, which is proportional to four velocity, is space-like, so it cannot be four.
It's a reasoning by absurd, by contradiction. So if you say that you can be stationary, let's assume I can be stationary, then dt would be proportional to the four velocity would be proportional to psi, that is dt, but dt is space-like inside, so this is not possible.
But what would be an actual proof?
This is an actual proof.
This is for contradiction. Not a proof of contradiction.
Well, I don't know what...
Because this isn't giving you an intuition. You're saying you...
Right. Well, you can compute geodesics and try to find solutions, but this would just be geodesics. This is a much more general argument that says that even if you're accelerating, your four velocity has to be time-like if you're... Just because, because of causality, but it cannot be proportional to partial t, because partial t is space-like. So it's just as direct as I think as it can be.
This definition is coordinate independent, right? In the sense that
this definition is coordinate independent because we are taking the Killing vector field. No matter in which coordinates we express it, is a property of the metric, not of the coordinate system. In this special coordinate system, it takes a simple form, but it's something given once you're given the metric. And this is where this Killing vector field vanishes, which is also a coordinate independent.
Okay.
but the result is not.
I'm telling you where it is in a certain coordinate system. Otherwise, yeah, I need to.
Okay, so this might be a dumb question, but is the reason you can't have like a space like for velocity, would that imply you're like traveling faster than the speed of light? Is that what it means? Like, what?
Yeah, if for velocity needs to be always inside the light cone, must be time-like.
Okay.
Otherwise, yes, you would be going faster than the speed.
Okay.
Okay. So now let's see. Let's see what we have. We have okay. I lost a bit. Okay, so now what we want to do is to use this special fact where something funny is happening here that wasn't possible in Schwarzschild. And now we want to leverage this weirdness of this region. So remember that the concept of energy at infinity is related to this Killing vector. We have computed this many times. The energy of the part of a particle is given by the frame of the particle is given by the contraction of psi with the four velocity. And this gives some, and if the particle is moving along a geodesics, this quantity is conserved along the geodetic motion. Now what is happening is that this contraction of psi with the four momentum has to be negative outside of the ergosphere because the four momentum is time-like and psi is also time-like. But all of a sudden it can become positive inside. So let's Oh, maybe before getting there, let me mention another few properties of the metric before going into this. Sorry. So, and because I will need them later, and it's easier to give everything now instead of going back. So the fact that this surface is time-like, it means that we can cross it as we please, both ways. It's not unidirectional as the horizon. This is just an observation, can be crossed two ways. And then back to the geometry, I want to add two important objects. First, there is, I can compute the area of the horizon. Which is the integral at r plus of g theta theta g phi phi. Because these, if I fix R and T, so I'm fixing my, it means that I'm just looking at the horizon. Theta and phi is a diagonal metric. And so this is the right thing to compute. And what we obtain is R plus square plus A square. Let's see if I need them more, which is also given by equivalently, there is a 4 pi. 4 pi r plus. Eight pi. This is something I will need later, so write it here. I've just replaced the formula for r plus inside and the algebra. So this is the area of the outer horizon. Then the other thing I want to mention is that from these two Killing vector field, I can build a third one, which is actually some important property. So I can define a new vector field, which is a linear combination of these two. So psi omega h is a constant and is equal to this quantity, so is a constant, and therefore chi is also a Killing. What is special about this Killing is that this Killing is null and tangent to the horizon, to the outer horizon. So what is special? This is special. Because chi A is null and future directed. And therefore tangent. Well, not therefore, but and tangent. So there are three properties which are important. Or, and since it's null, so if it's tangent, is also normal, which is a bit confusing. But if you are tangent to a null surface, you're also normal to it, because right? So this, the you're normal to any well.
Hey, what if you're
that doesn't tangent and normal.
Isn't tangent the opposite of normal?
Well, not for a null vector. A null vector is parallel to itself because they are proportional, but is also normal to itself because its inner product with itself is zero.
Oh, that's weird. Oh, okay.
So this is what it makes null direction confusing and special to the horizon, to the outer horizon. R equal R plus.
I'm sorry, what do you mean by tangent to the R plus?
So this is a space, so this picture is a snapshot at t equals zero, so you cannot see it here. If I want to draw a more space-like diagram, what I have is something like this. So this is R plus. It's a null surface. And now I have also some RL is a time-like surface, which is outside my horizon. And this is the ergosphere. So what he's saying is that chi is at the horizon, not elsewhere, but at the horizon, is directed like that.
What's psi A?
Psi A is the angular direction, is the phi direction.
Oh, it's the phi direction. Okay, thanks.
So this is a combination of time translations and rotations, and the coefficient in between them is the angular velocity of the black hole. So this is what is called.
Derive the omega tt in a way that chi a will be zero. So
chi a
will be null, or
so chi a is defined by this property. I look for the linear combination of these two such that this happens.
This happens meaning chi A is null?
Is null, future directed, and tangent to the horizon.
So you're using all of those conditions to get that?
Yep.
But you need only one equation to solve for?
Well, there are signs. So the nullness is one. Then there are signs involved, which is the future directed. Well, if it's tangent, since the horizon is null, this is stronger than that one. So in the end, I just need these two. This is just to emphasize the fact that this will be null.
So what were the mathematical equations that you used just here?
the tangency, and then one sine to fix this one. And the fact that they want it to be a killing, so it must be a linear combination of killing vectors. It's non-trivial that this thing exists, but is a theorem that any black hole, any event horizon properly defined, is actually also a killing horizon, which means that a killing with this property exists. So it's a non-trivial, is a quite non-trivial statement. I'm just saying in this case I can build it explicitly and it takes this form.
I don't quite understand how you explicitly make this. I understand that you're using it being tangent and also future directed, but what are the mathematical equations that you just wrote? So you said for in general chi A is a constant times ca plus a constant times psi A, and then what equation did you use to simplify those constants to omega h?
The tangency to the surface.
What equation is that?
So essentially, so if you have a linear combination of killing vectors, will be a killing vector. So I already know that it must be of this form. I can fix the overall normalization, and by convention, one fixes this to be one.
Okay.
And then the next thing one has to say is that chi A at R plus is equal zero.
Mm-hmm. Why is this strong?
So in fact, this.
Why is it stronger than being saying that it's just a null vector?
No, this is not stronger, but there are at the horizon there are two null directions. This could have two solutions. Right? One going along the horizon and one going inside. And then you have to pick the right one.
And you pick the
one that is tangent.
Can you say one more time why it's how it can be parallel with itself and normal?
If I have a light like vector, LA is proportional to LA, so it's parallel to itself. And LA is equal to zero, so it's normal to itself.
Is there like?
One has to learn to live with this, and it's very confusing when one speaks. So it's also one needs to be careful of letting yourself understood when you're talking about null surfaces.
Okay, so it's only on null surfaces, and is it kind of like, because I don't know, it's just like the hyperbolic geometry of it. Is that just
no? It's just you have a metric which is zero. I don't know. 1, 1, and the vector 1, 0, 0 is both parallel to itself because it's proportional to itself and is also normal because its inner product. It's just that you have a degenerate metric on the.
Oh, okay.
Why did you have these conditions for chi A again?
Well, this is a special killing vector field that is assigned to the to the black hole spacetime. So there are other ways of introducing this omega h. This is the most economical one. By picking you say, I have some killing vectors, and then I can find a special killing vector which has some extra properties that select it among all possible linear combinations of my two-dimensional space of killing vector fields, which is tied to the nature of the horizon. So I can be fairly sure that this combination contains some important information about the black hole. And this omega h can also be defined in terms of the limiting. So when I'm this phi dot, when I get close to the horizon, must equal that omega h. That's another way to define it.
Without taking too much detail, could you roughly say how you would parameterize R plus in order to be able to produce a vector like that?
R plus is just parameterized by the remaining coordinates, t, phi, and theta. Well, R equal R plus is a surface. parameterized by t, phi, and theta. And I can plug in r equal r plus inside. Well, if I plug it inside that metric, I will run into troubles because this metric is not smooth across the horizon because there is 1 over deltas. So I will have to find appropriate coordinates in which this doesn't happen and check that the resulting surface is null. And that is not the true singularity. So doing the computation would actually require quite more work.
Any linear combination of tangent r close to r smooth?
No, because so if I have.
There's no close to.
No, the main there is dt d phi. There is a dt d phi. There is dt minus a sine theta d phi square.
Normal vector for the constant r is partial r.
So these chi in those coordinates is dt plus omega h d phi. So its norm with itself contains a dt square term, a d phi square term, and a mixed term,
yeah.
Which is actually.
I mean, for this third condition, which the second condition should be tangent to the.
Well, tangent.
So that means if you contract with the normal vector of the constant r surface, then it should be zero.
Well, but the normal here, it means that it should be zero against itself because I'm defining it to be the null generator of. What you're saying? You're talking about partial r?
Yes.
Well, there are no partial r, the metric is diagonal in r, so this will be orthogonal to partial r no matter what. Which other coefficients I put?
It is always tangent to the constant r surface.
But partial r is null at the horizon, so you run into those subtleties. So it's one has to be careful of what tangent and normal means. I think, but maybe that's the. The origin of the puzzle. Okay. So essentially, that Killing vector field is telling me that the horizon is not static, is spinning at velocity omega h. Because this is a combination of time translation. So this object is generating the horizon. So if I move along this Killing vector field, I'm moving along the horizon because we are tangent to it, like this. And this is something that evolves in time, but also moves in the phi direction at the same time. At the speed at which it moves is this omega h. So this is quite intuitive that this omega h should be related to the spinning velocity of the hole. Does this heuristic argument make sense? So psi h generates the horizon, is something that moves along the horizon, which is a null surface. And it moves both in t and in phi. So to stay on the horizon, you have to move both in t and in phi. And this is why from infinity, it looks like the thing is rotating. And omega h is the rotation speed. So before, let me also write here the formula. Which I hope I have somewhere. Yes. So this is J 2m m plus 1 to the 4. Good. Now we have all the ingredients we need. Now, the idea behind this next step is the observation I mentioned before, but I didn't write down, that the energy, in quotes, of, well, not in quotes, but actually the energy of a particle moving in the ergosphere could be negative, in the sense that the sign of psi A contracted with my 4 velocity can have the wrong sign, because dt becomes space-like. So now I want to use this observation to come up with some process that allows to extract energy from the black hole, taking into using precisely the fact that a particle moving in the ergosphere can have some strange property relatively to the energy. So how does this work? So now I'm looking at the black hole from the top. This is the top view at t equals 0. Things are rotating. This is r plus. This is rl. And anything moving inside here has to rotate together with my black hole. Now, the idea is to...
Wait, what? Are there two different rotation velocities? Two different angular velocities?
Two different?
Well, you have two arrows.
Well, it's just a drawing. I'm just saying that whatever is here cannot be static. So this is to remind me that things have to move.
Why isn't RL touching R plus in those poles?
This is a top view. That was a side view. So the axis of rotation, this is to say that the axis of rotation is coming out of the blackboard. There it was looking, was the Z axis. OK, so now the idea is I have some particle P0 entering my ergosphere along a geodesics. Then something happens, some explosion, the particle explodes and breaks into two pieces. And one piece will fall into the horizon, and the other one comes out. So there is no contradiction with this, because we saw that the limit surface, the stationarity limit surface is time-like, so we can get in and out no problem, whereas it would be a problem if we could. We're not asking this particle to come up. So, and now I want to, so I call this in the sense that it falls in, and p out in the sense that it comes out. So this is the idea. Now we know that the energy, the total energy of the process must be conserved. But now the crazy idea is, can we concoct things in such a way that the particle falling into the black hole carries negative energy? And so this one has to come out with more energy than the other one has come in. And the answer is yes. And in fact, one can also do this by making sure that everything, that these are all geodesics. I will not try to compute the geodesics and prove that they can be geodesics, but just do a qualitative computation saying, if this can happen, what's the answer? So I'm not showing that it can, but I'm stating Penrose made sure that it can. But so now the energy of the incoming particle is minus p mu, p0 mu psi mu. The energy, and this is conserved along my trajectory. So it means that this is the incoming particle. At this event here, I have, so at the explosion, I have conservation of energy momentum, of course. So at that point, P mu is equal to P in plus P out. And then, when and in particular, contracting with Xi, I get that E0, which is the same, I can compute it at infinity or not, conserved, because Xi is a killing, that's a crucial point. Now, E0 is equal to E in plus E out. This is my explosion event.
No.
I'm just contracting the previous equation. I'm contracting this with Xi. Now, what happens? So now we observe that since we are in the ergosphere, whereas this sign is always this is always positive, now this is not, although it's a killing, so things have to be, this quantity has to be conserved going in and out, but since this is this flips its time-like to space-like nature inside the ergosphere, what can happen is that this one, I can fix it to be, if this falls in some particular direction, this can be actually less than zero. Because this is not a given, but I can make it happen. It's not a because possible, because dt psi equal dt is space-like. In ergosphere. While, of course, P mu is always time-like. So whereas these were two time-like objects, inside the ergosphere, one is space-like, one is time-like. So their inner product doesn't need to be negative and therefore positive with the sign, because I'm flipping signs to keep the sign of the energy at infinity positive. So this can be actually negative. So this means, of course, that
positive. This is just you can choose anything you want.
This could also be positive, yes. But I'm throwing it inside the in particle in such a way that this is negative. And the fact that this is possible is because dt is space-like. Otherwise, this would not be possible. This is only possible because of this.
And one question also, why is momentum conserved in that way, in the sense of?
Because at each point in space-time, you can apply the equivalence principle, being in the rest frame. And in that rest frame, you have special relativity holding, and for momentum as well. I'm sitting on the part.
How can it be positive? Since IA has to be necessarily space-like in state equivalence, it should be bounded by zero, I think.
It should be?
Bounded by zero, and all energy should be negative.
So if I have something which is in Minkowski, let's say, I don't know, 1/2 0 0, this is time-like. And this is space-like. The Rinner product is positive. So something time-like with something space-like can be positive. Of course, it can also be negative. I put a minus there. So depending on which direction I'm throwing in the particle, I have to throw it in the right direction. But it's possible to make it happen so that it's possible.
So you have a negative sign outside there.
So the signs are confusing because the energy is not quite the inner product of P and Xi, but minus the inner product of P and Xi.
Oh, okay.
Because of the signature. So
okay.
The weird thing would be to have a negative energy, and this is what I'm putting. So in this way, I can extract energy from the black hole. So E out, the one that comes out, has more energy than the one. Than the one that gets in.
And one thing. So the thing that you mentioned about locality would imply that that equation holds at the point at which they separate.
Yeah. So this is what I mean here. So this.
At the point of fracture.
At this point, I have that equation.
Okay.
And at this event, this is called an event, yes.
And you're guaranteed that also far before and far away, like the things.
No, so what I'm saying is that this object is conserved along this trajectory, this one is conserved along that trajectory, and the last one is conserved along this one, and at this point they adapt to what they adapt.
Okay. Is this physical?
It is. And now I want to make an observation. So if we are able to have a particle with negative energy inside the ergosphere, since this quantity is conserved along the trajectory, it means, and since energy has to be positive outside, it means that this particle has it cannot ever come out of the ergosphere if it's along a geodesic.
Change the definition of our energy when we go inside the ergosphere, say P mu xi mu is energy now, not
well,
mu xi mu.
Because then energy would be negative.
No, then the energy would be positive.
Well, you need to give a consistent definition for all objects in your theory, and at infinity, where nothing special is happening, we're in Minkowski, that's a correct definition. Psi is a killing of the entire space-time. And so that's what you get if you want your definition to match what the definition at infinity in Minkowski.
Can the difference between the energy that goes out and the energy that we put in, delta E, can it be arbitrarily large? Or is there a bound?
We will get to this kind of bound. So now, What does this mean? It means that delta m of the black hole during the Penrose process is equal to E in, which is negative, right? So we have extracted, because there is also the total energy must be conserved. So the total energy is the mass of the black hole plus the initial energy. So this is from total energy conservation implies. So the Penrose process extracts energy from a rotating black hole. Yes.
So in a Schwarzschild black hole, the entire mass is fixed at a point. But in the Kerr black hole, it will be in the disk, rho is equal to.
Sorry, can.
In Schwarzschild black hole, the entire mass of the star collapses to a point. But here it collapses to a disk. And delta m would mean that some of the mass is going away from the disk.
So, no, nothing comes out. Well. So here, what is happening? You can the way one can think about this is the fact that the well, we will get to exactly this formula in a moment. But you have also not just the rest mass of the black hole. There's also rotational energy of the black hole, which contributes to the total energy and therefore the mass. So the mass, in a sense, you can think of it as a combination of there's also some rotational energy that cannot be districated from what's going on. And what we will see is that, in fact, we have not just removed mass, we have also removed angular momentum. And so, in a sense, you can think of these as having having removed angular momentum and therefore some energy, some rotational energy from the black hole. So it's not that you have extracted something from the singularity. It's not what's happening. You're slowing down the black hole and reducing its total energy. And in fact, in a Schwarzschild, once you reach a Schwarzschild black hole by removing angular momentum, you cannot go anywhere because there's no ergosphere. So the process stops there. And this is related to your question. So you can, in a sense, extract energy up to the point where you have stopped the black hole from rotating and then go far.
Can you explain a bit why the particle gradient?
Oh, this one, if it's on a geodesic, which is what we are assuming, cannot escape because suppose that this one was the one with the negative energy, then this quantity would be conserved along this geodesic. But then you would have a negative energy at infinity, which is not possible if the particle is moving towards the future. Because this combination at infinity is the contraction of two time-like objects, future-pointing time-like objects, which must be negative and therefore the energy positive. So again, by contradiction, we prove that this cannot ever escape. Yeah.
Can we really not say it can have negative energy? Because like maybe if we like combine some ideas with QFT, we could be like, well.
Okay, this is another. So there is no QFT here, and there will. Well, I don't think I will get there, but there would have been some QFT at the end. But the point is, it's slightly debatable whether one can call energy this quantity inside here because I'm contracting P with something space-like. The reason why I can do that is because from the point of view of someone at infinity, what they observe is a net extraction of energy. And here, there is a conservation of this quantity. And so somehow our language is not, it's two steps behind the mathematics of the problem, but it still gives some intuition in this sense, because delta m is exactly equal to this. So if I think of this as a negative energy, it actually makes sense. It's the difference. It is still the difference between the incoming and outgoing energy, which is negative. So in that sense, it makes sense. It doesn't make sense locally, because there is no frame in which this is the actual energy of the particle.
If you look at that equation, just the E is zero is equal to E n plus E out. You know, E out means something physical. It means energy. E zero, you mean it's energy, and because E n whatever it is, it's less than zero. So therefore, your E out is bigger. I think that's what you said. But but when you write delta m is equal to E n, now you're actually asserting that this En is signifying something along the lines of an energy, a quantity that is describing energy.
So the,
basically, you are claiming that an energy is less than zero. Aren't you?
So the point is, this is, in a sense, the energy as seen from infinity, because this quantity m, e out, e zero, actually correspond. So m, let me put it this way, m plus e zero is the total energy of my system at the beginning, and is conserved, so it must be the same at the end. So that's why I find that formula. At the end, what I have, m prime plus e out, this is the conservation of the total energy, and m prime minus m is that.
So En is actually a quantity.
So, yes, but this is the energy as seen from infinity. M, remember, is the mass of the black hole seen from infinity. So what is happening here is that this particle seen from infinity as a negative energy. But what does it mean to see a particle inside the ergosphere from infinity? It just means doing this computation. It's not that this particle, it cannot ever escape to infinity. So I cannot directly measure in any, you see what? So this particle is just inside, never reaches infinity. So it's not that I can do an actual measure of this energy from infinity and say it's that one, because it never reaches there. But in the at the end of the story, everything behaves like seen from infinity. Well, behaves as if this particle was carrying a negative energy.
Something that we cannot measure, but we cannot see, but we can see the effects because
yeah.
We can measure the energy of the outgoing point.
Yes, exactly. So the net effect is as if the infalling, well, not the the particles in. Is had the yeah, everything happens as if it had a negative. Okay, now we have used Xi to deduce all these crazy relations and find this conclusion. But we have another killing vector, which is special. So this one was defining for us energy, but now we have also chi, which knows about which is really tied to the nature of the black hole, as we said before. So why not doing the same computation for Xi, for chi instead of Xi? So now let's look. And in fact, you see, doing it for chi is a bit like doing it for Psi, but with added information, the fact that this one will be null at the horizon. So let's look at Ka and the associated conserved quantity. So now I know that P mu chi mu is equal to, let's look at the 0, 1, well, will be minus E, 0, plus omega H, L, 0. So what is L is the angular momentum, right? Is I'm contracting P mu with a killing vector field associated to rotation. So this will be the angular momentum of the particle. Now I can perform the same tricks as before, and in particular, what I care about is what happens when I look at the infalling and at the one that falls inside. And the reason is the following: if this is my horizon, so this is the interior of the black hole. And here is my ergosphere. Now, what is happening is that my chi vector was directed like this by construction. And my particle P in is falling inside. So this means that this is time-like, this is future-directed, this one has to be less than zero. Let's make sure I got the signs right. Does that make sense from this diagram, that this has to be less than zero? So this is, we said that chi, if you look at the list of properties, is that it's future-directed. So it looks up. And P in is also future-directed and time-like. So their inner product must be negative. I can see it because these are both inside the same light cone. Well, this is at the boundary, but it doesn't really change that.
How did you use them being future-directed to
get that sign? Because if they're the opposite sign, so if you have two time-like future-directed vectors, their inner product must be negative. But if someone is past-directed, then that doesn't. So here they're both future-directed. And so this is negative.
Chi mu wasn't time-like, though. But...
Well, it's null, so it holds. It holds anyway. I can go in the frame of the particle where this is 100 and this is 1 with the 1 somewhere else, if you want, in some coordinates at least. And so this. Okay, so this is both future directed. And therefore, E sign follows. But now I can compute this guy. Why I'm interested in this one? Because my delta m is associated to E in, and I know that this one will spit out E in. But now there is also omega h L in. And this implies necessarily that, now I need to get the signs right, L in
Wait, sorry, I'm still not sure I understand. Why mathematically? Would you mind showing us, P mu and chi mu?
So I go.
Why they end up being negative?
I go in the frame where this is at rest.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And in that frame, this one has to be. Null and future directed. So it means that it has some positive number here and something there to make it null.
And
the inner product is negative.
Is minus plus.
Well, the metric can always be turned into the Minkowski metric locally. Mm-hmm. So in that inertial system where this is at rest, instantaneously, when crossing the horizon, this is the situation. And
okay.
Why?
For a second, when I go to there, E in is less than zero. Are we referring to the Pappus process again?
Yes. Yes. It was. I was looking at the same situation. Yes. So this is the Pappus process. You're right. This is true, no matter what. But this is negative, only in that. So. What we see is that, well, these are negative, so this is bigger than that one. So it's extracting more angular momentum than energy. And this is the trick. Because I can, of course, do the same. I also have that delta L of my delta J, I was calling it J, is equal to L in for the same reason that this came out. I can do the same thing as before. But now this is, let's pick like things that turn in the positive direction, otherwise there would be even more signs around. And so this is E in divided by omega H, which is less than zero. So, and this is, sorry, let me say one more thing. This is delta M over omega.
Oh.
Well, maybe it was even nicer to put the omega H here. So I have to adjust this. Omega H delta L, which is equal to delta M, which is less than zero. So I've slowed down my hole and not just removed energy. And in fact, I've removed more angular momentum than energy. Yes?
I'm confused now. So you said that delta M was the loss of angular momentum as well, and not just the mass?
That's a picture. M is defined in a certain...
So the Penrose process is telling me that even classically, the black hole can lose energy. But I don't see how, because nothing is allowed to escape the horizon.
So what is happening is that, in that sense, this is here nothing is escaping the horizon ever. So we're not violating causality or anything. This is quite a surprising effect, because usually the usual intuition of a Schwarzschild black hole is that these kind of things cannot happen. If we throw something in, the mass grows, and that's it. Whereas here, I can actually have like a Sling effect, maybe, where I have something getting close to the black hole and coming out with even more energy. How does that work? It's extracting a little bit of angular momentum and energy from the hole. So somehow this thing is rotating. So this gets a kick by riding over the rotation. But this can happen only if it lets something go inside. Otherwise, it would come out with the same energy. So I don't have much more intuition than this to give. I would say heuristically, this mass as a total energy contains also some rotational energy in its total number. And so what I have extracted, in a sense, is rotational energy. But this is, I don't know if this can be made more precise. For me, it's more an heuristic to get convinced that this is plausible.
If we do this process until the ergosphere shrinks to zero area, do we get Schwarzschild or something else?
Yeah, yeah. You would get Schwarzschild by removing. No. The mass has been reduced. Very much the right question. So, how much you can? If you can suppose that I remove all the angular momentum of this by the Penrose process, but this angular momentum is bound by. These I always find a bit confusing to state. Anyway, there is a maximal amount of mass that you can extract, which is essentially governed by what J was, and this will bring you to the Penrose process. So if you want to extract the most the largest amount of mass, you have to saturate this equality. And so and then you can check what kind of final state you would reach. And there is, and the minimal mass that you can get at is called the irreducible mass, and I will get there in is the next thing that you wanted.
Is it fair to say that most of the current black holes will lose angular momentum and eventually become a Schwarzschild black hole because of the stresses?
Sorry?
Most of the curved black holes, they lose their angular momentum and eventually become a Schwarzschild black hole because of this process.
Yeah, I don't. In a physical situation, probably it's best to ask Luis how relevant is the super radiance of the Penrose process in for rotating black holes to shed angular momentum in a physical setting.
So it's very relevant in some context. So the context of, for instance, thinking. Actually, that whatever dark matter field is might take energy from black holes and grow as well. And as that, it might variate and give a particular coherent radiation that once it goes on. That's one option. A phenomena akin to Fokker radiation,
Penrose
super radiance. The super radiance exists because instability is zero to the ionosphere. So they are, in the context of astrophysics, similar. Ingredients come in trying to explain jets from black holes, GMs, and gamma ray bursts. So that's a very practical application.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the time scale of super radiance is very long. So to see in action is not going to be possible. But consequences of it and things that are related to it, they're very practical.
Thanks. So now. So we got this inequality over here, which is omega h delta j less than delta m. And it's quite remarkable that, and it will look like a bit of a coincidence, that this can be written in a more compact form and actually quite suggestive one in terms of A. So if you're patient and look and compute what delta A is, well, it's not a very long computation, but I can actually do it quickly. So this is just to give an idea of what comes in. So I just compute delta A. So whatever, what does this computation mean? It means that I'm comparing the Kerr black hole before the Penrose process has happened and after the Penrose process has happened, for example. But in fact, this holds in general. It's just the relationship between A in terms of the mass and angular momentum. So it is actually even more general than that, but this is how I want to think of it, as before and after. And here, m4 minus j square. And now I can rearrange. I can pull out 2m, m square plus m to the 4, j square over. So this quantity that looks more or less like nothing at this level. And here I recognize the angular velocity coming in, delta j. So this is the second one, is omega h. And so I'm pretty much at this level, I can be done in the sense that I've proven that these equation holds, since this is always positive, manifestly, if and only if delta A is positive. But I want to go one step farther and recognize what this is. I will not do the computation, but I will say that this is up or down, 1 over k, yes, is 1 over kappa. And this kappa, we have seen for Schwarzschild in tutorial, is so kappa squared. Which definition did we give? Oh, I forgot. I forgot which there are many equivalent definitions of this kappa, and I forgot the one I gave you. I wrote it down. Okay, this is square root of V, where V so in Schwarzschild this was psi, was the, you remember we were looking at the stationary observers, how much surface gravity they were, how much acceleration they were undergoing, and we found that the acceleration was infinite when they got close to the horizon, but there was a corrected version that was finite and was 1 over 4 times the mass. Now, in this case, the right object, the right analog of psi is not psi, but this chi, the one that knows about the horizon. And so this is the redshift factor, in a sense. Well, I don't know if it's not quite correct to call it like this, but this is the right quantity that goes into the definition of this kappa square, which doesn't have quite the same flavor of static observers and so on in Schwarzschild, but is still called the surface gravity.
Kappa,
not kappa. Yeah, now I'm the square. Maybe there are even 1/2. Don't trust this equation too much. And this is computed, sorry, at the horizon.
Isn't kappa equal to square root of this?
Yeah, probably. Don't trust the prefactors of this one. You can find it in World. I copied it, but I might have made a mistake.
The area of the event horizon is changing now?
Yeah, exactly. So what is happening, you see, the area depends on the mass and grows with the mass, like in Schwarzschild. But if I at a given mass, I add angular momentum, is actually decreasing. So if I extract, in this way, what is happening is that even though I'm reducing the mass, if I increase the angular momentum is shrinking. So if I reduce the angular momentum is expanding at a given mass. So this is what allows the area to grow, even though I'm removing mass, is because I'm removing even more angular momentum. And so, just a second. And so, the best that the Penrose process can do in removing mass is in the case where this is saturated. So, when A stays constant is when, and I remove all the angular momentum, is that this gives me the maximal amount of mass that I can extract. So, I compare a solution without angular momentum and a given area, and the initial condition, and I compare the two masses, and that's the maximal amount of mass I can extract. So in fact, the area multiplied by appropriate factors of 16 pi or something is actually an under a square root, but is also sometimes called the irreducible mass of the Kerr black hole. So there is a relation, which I think, if I remember correctly, is this modulo factors of 2. And this is the reason, because since this is bound to be positive, the best way, the most efficient Penrose process in extracting mass is the one that keeps this constant, because it's the one saturating this equality.
That's the area of event horizon?
Yeah, that's the area of the event horizon. Yeah, so in the best possible scenario, I'm keeping the area constant by removing mass and angular momentum at the same, in a balanced way.
Is mu in chi mu less than zero or less or equal to zero?
Well, they are, you cannot, that's, so, exactly, you cannot quite saturate the bound, but you can get as close as, because this is less than zero. Cannot be zero.
That's weird. So you're saying the first entry of your chi mu can be as arbitrarily close to zero as you want it to be, but equal to zero?
Well, it means if I, because this is null and this is time-like. So if they were both null and parallel, this would give a zero answer, zero inner product. But I know that I cannot be, a massive particle cannot be on a null trajectory. Mm-hmm. So it can get as close as I want by accelerating it and getting into the black hole just barely, but it will never be tangent. So that's why it's a bound. Mm-hmm. And that which cannot be saturated.
In that particular picture, the more effort you put into your explosion or whatever, the more PN you give in a particular direction, the more energy you're going to extract.
Yeah, the more, well, I don't know if it is about how much energy I'm putting in.
The more you get your P mu in close to your null trajectory, which is chi mu.
More
energy you're going to extract, which is going to saturate that, is going to get close to saturating that equation.
You want these to enter the horizon, like barely tangentially. So in a sense, you have to aim it appropriately. I don't know if this means giving this more energy or what. I understand what you're saying. I'm not so sure in this.
Because if there wants to be zero, P mu also has to be null, I think.
Wait. There are two nulls at the horizon, so you could be using
that. Well, the other null, but the other null would give a not a zero. They're not normal. Yeah, so if you go straight into the horizon, you get the opposite. Well, it's negative, but it's maximally negative. Okay. So this is where I wanted to go, and from there I wanted to say that, in fact, this Penrose process is a classical situation in which we can actually compute things and see how these inequalities come about. And in fact, what we obtain by also doing this computation here was another equality. So that's an inequality. And then we also have an equality, which is delta m is always equal, because I'm just comparing two Kerr solutions, to kappa delta a over 8 pi plus omega h dj. And I would have wanted to focus on these two equations and say that, in fact, well, this we already know is general, but it can be even more generalized if we have black holes which are not in vacuum. So here we're assuming Kerr, but even though we can add matter outside and have a more complicated Einstein solution and prove inequality like this more abstractly, and it would still hold with the area of the horizon, the surface gravity, the mass seen from infinity, and the angular momentum seen from infinity. And then this equation here also holds in extreme generality and is called the, in that more general situation, is called the Hawking area theorem, which says that the area of an event horizon, defined again in a more abstract way, has always to increase in any physical process. So the event horizon of a black hole. the event horizon of a white hole, of course, has to decrease. So that's the correct time reversal, because I'm taking things, you know, that we will see it, in fact, in tutorial today, that how the time reversal of the even the Schwarzschild solution has a white hole.
I'm trying to understand what you mean by that equation is general.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that the variation is computed only in the case of the Penrose process. If there's
no
other process.
No. Here I'm just comparing two Kerr solution. It's always true. I've never put any input about the Penrose process. Where the Penrose process comes in is to say that there is a relationship between these two, which tells me that delta A has to be positive. So Penrose process plus this equation give me this. What I'm now claiming is that both can be proved independently of the Penrose. Well, this is independent already, but can even be proved in a more general situation beyond the Kerr solution. And this can also be proved in a completely abstract setup where I just look at event horizons of black holes. And I just let the dynamic go. And one can show that the area, the cross-sectional area of the horizon has to increase. So this was a toy model, which was actually quite counterintuitive and interesting. And it shows how involved things can be when talking about Kerr black holes. And it's an actually beautiful, I think, construction, this Penrose process, which is worth seeing, and also give an example of this. Now, what is striking here, and this will be like the last thing I will say, is that this looks a bit like the thermodynamic equality between change of energy is equal to, we don't know what this is yet. And here we have some work we are doing by extracting and removing angular momentum. So this is a bit like PEDV. And if we want this analogy to hold with thermodynamics, we also know that S, the thing that increases is the entropy. So at this point, it's just a guess. So here we want a temperature. Why this should be a temperature? Black holes are classical objects that are actually perfect absorbers. So they do not radiate, they do not emit, they don't do anything. So we don't know. This is a guess. And this holds if and T is related to K, kappa. Now, it turns out, as you know, that if we add quantum fields on a black hole spacetime, that we will see an outflux of thermal radiation from reaching infinity as if it was coming from the black hole. So, and the temperature of that radiation is precisely this. I hope I put the H bar in the right place. If it's not there, it's at the denominator, but I think it's correct. And sorry, just a second. And one can already see that if one wants this correspondence to work, I've reinstated the factor of G. If S is essentially a dimensionless quantity up to factors of kappa B, but let's put KB to 1. So we want S to be dimensionless. And this object is not dimensionless. The only way to make it dimensionless is to add, what you need is exactly the unit of H bar here. So these already, these would say that probably if you want to make the correspondence correct, you will need quantum mechanics. And now in the Hawking process, you actually check that these objects, this kappa is indeed secretly encoding a temperature, not so secretly, explicitly now encoding a temperature. And so even though we have no clue, there are lots of computations and I can give you references for some reviews, but although we have no definitive proof that of what degrees of freedom this is counting, what kind of microscopic entropy this is, all evidence suggests that this S is that the area corresponds to some entropy. Now, there is one last thing that you might be worried about, which is if the black holes, even a Schwarzschild black hole now can radiate, not just through the super radiance processes where you extract energy. So, but a Schwarzschild black hole that radiates has a decreasing area because it sheds out energy, so the area decreases. So how is it possible? How is this consistent with our area law? And the answer to that question is subtle, is that to prove this, we need precisely this condition over here that the energy that we put in is positive, essentially. So it's expressed in a more abstract way, is a positive energy condition for the matter fields in your spacetime. But this does not hold necessarily for quantum fields. So the trick is that quantum fields can violate the positive energy condition locally. And so this is how they evade the positive area theorem. And this is how a Schwarzschild black hole can consistently shed energy.
Where should we? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I'd close it here just to, well, but then you can ask your.